Welcome in, everyone, to the Late Night Baseball Show. It's deep into the evening on Monday, December 9th. We are giving you an extra show this week because... Wait a second. Hold on, Parker. This isn't right. Hold on. This isn't right. There we go. I am ready go. All right, folks. God. Juan Soto is a New York Met. How about it, Parker?
I mean, I think everybody kind of thought this was the most likely scenario, but holy shit. I mean, I didn't count on Steve Cohen becoming indebted to Juan Soto to the tune of 3% of his overall net worth. Okay, $765 million is the number. Okay, this is the number that, and the crazy part is that's not even the highest they can go. It could be $805 million if he accepts the option for the last 10 years of this contract. This is Juan Soto's the richest athlete in the history, like from an athletic contract in the history of professional sports. I can't believe that it happened when it did. Because it literally, like, they waited for Brian Cashman to fly to Texas, show up at the winter meetings, and be like, Juan Soto's a New York Met.
There is so much we could dive into here. We're going to spend the whole time talking about Juan Soto because, folks, it is a really, really big deal. We're going to talk about why in a second. But like I said, welcome in the Late Night Baseball Show. We were so excited about the Juan Soto news. We had to do an extra session here this week. We're just two guys that talk baseball deep into the night and nothing's off the table. So I'm Anthony. This is Parker. We're with you every week talking baseball. And this week we are really excited about Juan Soto. Now, let me be very clear here because, Parker, let's just real talk for a second. We are excited about what this means for baseball, but there is some pain in your heart because this is not how you wanted this to go.
No, not even a little bit. I wanted Juan Soto to be wearing the uniform of the Boston Red Sox. And I think this is I think Red Sox fans feel a little more bite from this than maybe other fan bases, except for the Yankees. The Yankees definitely got screwed the most here. But, I mean, mm-hmm. The Red Sox were just listed in the finalists the entire time, throughout the entire negotiation process. And from what it sounded like, they had a very good shot at signing Juan Soto. Come to find out, they were not, it's hard to say that when you're it's $60 million off, roughly. When you're $60 million off, you don't feel like you were close. But when that $60 million is $700 versus $765, it's like, okay, weren't that far off. If you're willing to go in for $700 million, then I can't really be too annoyed with the whole thing. But yeah, definitely disappointed. Definitely disappointed.
So you mentioned a little bit, Parker, kind of what exactly is included in this deal and why is this such a big deal? So it is 15 years, $165 million. Like you said, it can go over $800 million. And how that would work is he has an opt-out for 2029. And what the Mets could do is they could buy out the opt-out, essentially, add $4 million to the final 10 years of the deal, mm-hmm. which would put it over $800 million. Of course, the usual no trade clause is included in there, and a whopping signing bonus, as in here's a check, buddy, for $75 million. That is just nuts.
Yeah, Juan Soto's signing bonus is higher than any contract the Oakland Athletics have ever given a player ever. His signing bonus is bigger than that.
You brought up something interesting, Parker, that I want to highlight even more. You brought up it's the biggest contract in sports. And I saw this earlier and I thought this was a great frame of reference for this. This deal, just the contract, is greater than what LeBron James and Tom Brady have made in their career.
Yes, the respective greatest of all times of their sports.
My God.
Yeah. The crazy part for the – I'm going to do a little bit of a breakdown on the numbers here, and this is what really opened my eyes to how ridiculous this contract is. First of all, there's a solid chance he opts out after 2029. So what does that look like? First 5 years of this contract are $51 million average annual value. In 2029, Juan Soto gets the choice to decide if he wants to hit free agency again at the ripe old age of 31 years old. You know, when most people are normally hitting free agency. And then if he decides to opt in, the next 10 years of the contract increase to a 56 $800 million AAV, and that's where we're going to go ahead and hit that $805 million mark. Now, why is this absolutely insane? Because it may seem like the Mets overpaid. And at face value, it certainly seems like it. But a really good point that I saw illustrated on Twitter, I think Jared Carrabas had this first, but I don't know where he got it, if he came up with it, congratulations. But basically, when you look at Aaron Judge's contract, Aaron Judge was signed through his age 32 through age 40 seasons. That cost the New York Yankees right around $360 million. I'm ballparking, but it's chump change compared to Juan Soto, so we can do that. $360 million for your age 32 to 40 seasons. So Juan Soto just said, yep, I'll take that. Now we can start negotiating. So he gets the $360 million that Judge gets from age 32 to 40 years old. And then on top of that, he just took the same contract over again and then a signing bonus for this almost the same amount of years from 26 until 32, arguably, probably, definitely the more productive years out of the entire contract. So when you break it down like that, to me at least, I said it yesterday, I think it was either in a text message, might have been on Twitter. He might be worth every single penny of this contract.
He may. And this is something that I do want to talk about in more detail in a bit, because I have some concerns, and my immediate reaction was yours, right? Like, holy crap, what an overpay. Like, did Steve Cohen and all these other owners just want the prettiest girl at the dance, right? Like, that's what it comes down to. In the year 2024, that's Juan Soto. Having said that, you know, when you look at this contract, I go back to literally last year when we talked about over and over again, Shohei Ohtani is a unicorn. He's going to get a unicorn contract. He's a Cy Young pitcher and an MVP hitter, and you get it all in one. So, of course, you know, $700 million with a lot of deferred money, but $700 million, it's a one and done, such a unicorn contract. But it blows my mind that you are getting one player who is, don't get me wrong, eons, hitting-wise, eons above everyone else, can't really field all that well, can't really run all that well.
I was just going to say, he's getting paid to hit.
That's it. He is someone that you could be paying $50-plus million a year to DH in 4 to 5 years, right? Like I just – it makes me wonder what these contracts are going to look like going forward. Now, having said that, there is one big difference here. He's 26. Yeah. Like, that really is driving the cost of this contract.
The crazy thing is, man, that I think I'm gonna go in and say you're wrong. I don't think you're paying him to DH in 4 to 5 years. You might still just be paying him to DH in 8 years. Like, he's still only 26.
That's true.
Play outfield until he's 34. You know, like, that's not out of the question.
Yeah.
I can't believe the numbers that got tossed around during this deal. Props to John Heyman. I was shit talking him the entire process and the entire all of yesterday. At least he was spot on. He's like, it's going to be a New York team. Everybody else looks really sad in the lobby. I mean, that's what ended up happening.
So, I do think I think your point's a good one. I think maybe I was being a little hyperbolic, but yes, if I think eventually it becomes a DH, but we are right, probably not until he's 33, 34 at least. But at that point, maybe, like you said, he's opting out of a contract, and that contract looks a lot different with another team. I want to talk about why the Mets, because you brought it up a little bit ago, where when you're talking about $700 million versus $760 million, which is where the Yankees were at, $5 million less. Like, to me, my first reaction when I saw that the Yankees offered 16 years, 760, and then the Mets ended up getting him for 15, 165, I immediately thought he did not want to go back to the Yankees, because you do not make a $5 million decision like that.
No. And it's also, I mean, you could talk about average annual money, because there was an extra year on that contract. And when you talk about that much money, the AAV changes significantly, even with one extra year. I think it comes down to two things. Number one, Aaron Judge is going to be the king of New York for a very long time, unless Juan Soto has something to say about it. And there is no better place to do that than across town.
Yeah,
it's going to be very hard to do that in the same lineup where you're fist bumping each other after each other's home runs. We saw the adverse of that with Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez. And honestly, this might end up being a blessing in disguise for Yankees fans. We saw how Jeter and A-Rod happened. I would hate to see the same situation happen with Judge and Soto. And I don't know that they are the same kind of people, and I don't know that that relationship would deteriorate in the same way.
Sure.
Just conjecture. But no, I think that if you are now the anti-Aaron Judge and you go play in New York but across town for the Mets, and you make more money than any Major League Baseball player has ever made ever, I think that's the perfect way for him to get my second point, which is being the guy, the number one guy on the team that he's going to play. And some people will say Francisco Lindor will always be the guy for the duration of his contract with the Mets, but there's just a different level of stardom to Juan Soto. Francisco Lindor is a clubhouse guy. He's the de facto captain of that team. He's a leader. But Juan Soto is just that superstar that even Lindor can't really stand up to.
I'm going to be honest with you. I've always had an appreciation for the Mets. The Mets have always seemingly over the years been just the team with the wrong place at the wrong time, and just the team that never got the breaks ever.
They're very Cubs to me.
Yes, they are very Cubs, which makes them and the Cubs going at it in 1969 NL East race was just such a big part of my Cubs fandom growing up and talking about that. But it is to me, this is a huge turning point for this franchise, and I have to give it up to Steve Cohen, because Steve Cohen, I mean, he was the only one of all these owners that invited Juan Soto to come to his house in SoCal and make it a really kind of heart-to-heart personalized visit. Everyone else visited him at a standard hotel set up by the Boris Corp, and not Steve Cohen. And Steve Cohen, from all accounts, is an owner that just is great with connecting with players. You put that with the shit ton of money that he has, this guy can literally get any player he wants.
Yeah. Steve Cohen, did you watch his press conference after the signing?
No, I did not.
So I didn't watch the whole thing, but I saw a pretty funny clip where they were like, they asked him, what do you think about the other bidders? You know, how into each other's heads were you, you know, and everything like that. And he goes, there were other bidders. I think he knew from Jump Street, I'm going to be paying this man $700+ million, and he's going to come play for the New York Mets.
Wow.
I think anybody kind of expected him to say something like that, but I genuinely think Steve Cohen's the craziest kind of person in the world. I think he believed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I know other owners feel a certain way about Steve and him dumping millions into a team. Quite frankly, I don't care. It makes for good baseball. Every team that's competitive is better for baseball. If he keeps doing this, I may have to just ditch the Sox and jump to the Mets, if I'm being perfectly honest, because it's just so exciting, right? Like you want to be a fan of a team that is in it to win it, no holds bar, going to pay all the luxury tax in the world to make sure you have a competitive team each and every year. And the Mets have never been in that scenario, quite the opposite.
No, and it didn't even work out for Steve Cohen in the first, 5 years of his ownership tenure. He dumped a bunch of money into the team that just didn't pay off. And hopefully this move pays off for him. Everybody, I really want to see somebody just like out Yankee the Yankees, out Dodger the Dodgers, like start spending the money that they're spending and beat them. Because right now, a lot of the talent in the big leagues is stacking up in the National League, and the Mets are going to have to play the Dodgers a few times this season and probably in the playoffs if they meet each other.
Yep.
So this is going to be an interesting National League moving forward. And don't forget the Phillies are still there and they're a very good baseball team.
They are. I start thinking about what that Mets team looks like. I mean, first off, you look at their lineup and I love the balance they have in that lineup. So that lineup right now, if you look at it, you put Soto in really what probably becomes the two spot, but let's just for sake of Fangraphs, Roster Resource has it listed out this way. So you have Francisco Lindor, of course, leading off, switch hitter. You have left-hander Juan Soto, Mark Vientos in the third spot, batting righty, Brandon Nimmo, lefty, cleaning up, Starlin Marte's a righty, Jeff McNeil, lefty, Tyrone Taylor in center. They'll probably do something about that. That's not great. Francisco Alvarez catching, and then third base, they have Brett Beatty, which probably won't be that way also come opening day. But that lineup, how do I say this? I like it. I still don't love it.
I don't think anybody does. I don't think Steve Cohen loves it.
True.
I don't think Mark Vientos loves it. I think they definitely need to sign one more bat minimum. I honestly think that bat should probably be just Pete Alonso. Bring it back. Get that clubhouse rocking. Get those fans just behind a bunch of guys that they know that they like, that did really well last season, and see what kind of magic you can make happen, because the first building block is there, and he's there for minimum 5, maybe 15 years. You got to build around him now. You have no choice whatsoever. So go out there and get him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see what this does mean for Pete Alonso. You know, in the world of Steve Cohen, when you have all this money, it probably means nothing, you would like to think. But a little trivia for you, Parker, because this surprised me. After this Juan Soto signing, as of right now, where do you think the Mets luxury tax payroll is right now?
Judging with Pete Alonso's contract falling off because he was making pretty good arb money, I would assume that the Scherzer money's gone, because Scherzer's a free agent. Verlander's money might still be hanging around 225. First.
Wow, missile. that was a really awesome guess. 251, which yeah. I thought was a little low, and I was forgetting about the drop off of Verlander and Scherzer. But 251 for a guy like Steve Cohen, they're hitting 300. They can hit three. I mean, last year was 325. Like they could add another frontline starter. They can go out and get a Max Fried, a Corbin Burns. I don't think they'll get Corbin Burns, but Max Fried certainly seems like a possibility. They could go out and get a Pete Alonso and go out and get another outfielder. I hear there's a guy, Luis Robert, that's on the market. So get him, right? I mean, what did I text you yesterday? I said, let it be a fucking coup and go get Roki Sasaki and piss everybody off. Like,
That would be awesome. Another good timeline I'm down for. I would be so happy if Steve Cohen just fucking stifles the Dodgers at every possible chance he gets. Because you know the Dodgers really want Roki Sasaki. And you know they were in on Juan Soto. I still don't think they were super down to pay Juan Soto that much money. I think they knew exactly how much he was going to cost. I wouldn't be surprised if they were just in it to drive the price up, which, hey, that's fair play. Because I still see Teoscar Hernandez re-signing with LA, probably for like 3 to 5 years, and that's their power bat. And the crazy part is I know there's a massive difference in production when it comes to Teoscar versus Juan Soto, but you're still going to get 30 bombs, 25 to 30 bombs out of Teoscar. He's still probably going to have a 750 or a higher OPS. Like, it's not the level of production. Obviously, we're talking about the law of depreciating returns here. The higher and better you get at the craft, the more and more and more and more exponential money you make. But with guys like a Tyler O'Neill who just signed with the Orioles, and just these good bats with pop that can play some outfield, there's definitely options. Especially when you mentioned earlier that the Mets need to fill that hole in center field. I don't know how many center fielders are out there on the market, but moves are there to be made. And this is the domino that had to fall, right? The entire market opens up now because Juan Soto. I would not be surprised. I mean, last night we got a million more moves, and I think a couple more today. The winter meetings are going to be an absolute firestorm. I will not be surprised if Corbin Burns and Max Fried wait until after the winter meetings to sign. But we're going to see position players start flying off the table.
Yeah, I think so. And so we will, like I said earlier, folks, this is kind of a spur of the moment, little extra emergency episode we wanted to do with you. But we will be back Thursday night, our normal time, because we're going to do a winter meetings recap. And day one today was a little light. We're recording late into day one. There wasn't too many. There was just a couple minor moves that we can say for Thursday. But I really do think tomorrow is going to be a crazy day. Like Parker said, I think things are going to heat up. I think the trade market's going to be quite active. But what I want to do, Parker, is since we are in the thick of the winter meetings here, you know, they're the teams that missed out on Juan Soto. Mm-hmm. They swung and missed in a big way. And I want to kind of go through them and talk through what is the next step for them, because I think all of these teams need to get better in a bad way. And I want to start with your Red Sox. I mean, for you, what do they do? What's the pivot now that they've lost out on Juan Soto?
You and I talked about it the other day via text. I think Max Fried is a Boston Red Sox. I think he's going to sign with the Boston Red Sox. If not, it's going to be a pretty big disappointment. Honestly, maybe a bigger disappointment than Soto, because Soto was always an outside shot. I think the Red Sox are solidly the favorites for Fried. We need two pitchers. We lost Nick Pivetta, and we need somebody who can bring his level of production and also a little more consistency. So a guy like Walker Buehler really sticks out to me, and I know he's going to be more expensive than Pivetta, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then Max Fried. And honestly, I could see a team like the Yankees. Maybe only the Yankees and Red Sox could pull off signing both a Fried and a Burns. That's a lot of money. We're talking like $500 million dollars of contracts there. Yeah. I don't think they go to the same team, but I could see them splitting Burns and Fried. Whichever one goes to the Yankees goes to the Red Sox, the other goes to the Red Sox, and vice versa. So the pitching market is the most intriguing thing for me right now, because I think sneaky, there are a lot of very good arms that are available that aren't getting any love at all because guys like Corbin Burns and Max Fried are soaking up all the spotlight.
100%. You know, I look at the Red Sox, and I mentioned to you yesterday, you know, to me, they still need at least kind of a higher profile bat, maybe a bench bat. And then you should really shoot for two starters, which for me, Max Fried, I think, is an obvious one. I'm not saying this because I'm biased. I really do think this. I really do think they have the pieces and should make a run at Garrett Crochet. I really do think that's your guy where you don't have to give up that much money and you can still get him for a couple of years and get a really productive left-hander.
Garrett Crochet scares me because it seems like the White Sox are being very, very demanding when it comes to the trade market. And also to this point, the Red Sox beat guys are saying that the Red Sox are outsiders looking in on that whole situation. So
I did hear that. Now, what I'll say there is I would be with you there that the White Sox are being pushy. One thing I will say, though, is if reports are true, things have picked up in the winter meetings and now you have the Red Sox involved, but outside looking in. You have the Brewers, the Reds, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Orioles. Now you're looking at 7-8 teams in total now that are involved. So I do think they'll get a deal done. I think sooner than later. I'm hoping to see it in the next couple of days. But, you know, for the guy, I know. So for the guys who don't want to go and spend for your Corbin Burns or your Max Frieds, Garrett Crochet is looking mighty attractive, and I think he will go soon.
Yep, especially at his age. Personally, so I already said I think Max Fried goes to the Red Sox. I also think that Jack Flaherty has a good chance of going to Boston. And weirdly enough, when you think Max Fried, personally, my brain goes to a more dominant pitcher than Jack Flaherty. But Jack Flaherty has 5.0 WAR in his age after his age 29 season, whereas Max Fried has 5.2 WAR after his age 31 season. So something to think about there. There's like I'm going to read off some of these names that are on the free agent market. And even if you sign one of them, some of them for a year, you're getting a lot of value. I mean, we have Max Fried, Nathan Eovaldi, Jack Flaherty, Kyle Gibson, Verlander still putting up a 4 WAR season last season. Pivetta's out there. Manaya's out there. I said Manaya to you in text last night. I still think Manaya would be a really good pickup for most teams. But yeah, there's a lot of guys out there.
So you want to know another reason why I really like your argument about Flaherty and Fried going to Boston? This fact has been like one of the biggest facts in baseball.
I thought
trivia.
You were about to tell me that I missed a Twitter update and that they both
No. But you'll enjoy this, and I only know this because it came up all the time because Giolito was on the White Sox.
Oh, yeah.
Max Fried, Giolito, and Jack Flaherty all were teammates in high school at Harvard Westlake. So if there's a reason to get the gang back together, here's your reason.
Yeah, get them all back together in Boston. That would be crazy. The pitching room would be so fun to be a part of, I'm sure.
Oh,
holy
man.
Holy shit, that's fucking crazy.
I know. That's enough of a reason right there. Once you started piecing that together, I'm like, does he know this? Because
I had no idea. The only prior to pro relationship in the big leagues I'm aware of is Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole, because that shit cracks me up every time.
They
hate each other.
Oh, yeah, they really do. And I could kind of see why. So that's the Red Sox. I think they're a team that regardless the money is going to be spent, obviously not that much, but they'll spend the money. They'll make the moves.
Mm-hmm.
the Yankees, Parker, they really screwed the pooch on this. Like, I think if I'm a Yankees fan, I'm absolutely infuriated. This is what they just didn't need right now.
I know a few Yankees fans that are genuinely pissed about this whole scenario. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. Being $5 million in a year off, like, it's like, were you even off because you gave him an extra year? It's just so, it seemed like he didn't want to go back to New York. And that feels
right.
That feels really bad as a fan. It feels like you're getting spurned. No fun at all. Honestly, though, Juan Soto wasn't going to fix every problem with that team. They need to focus on getting a second baseman. They need a first baseman. They need a couple outfield positions. There's a lot of work to do on that lineup that I just don't think Juan Soto fixes. I think you can spend half the money you would have spent on Juan Soto and be a better team than you were last year. Genuinely believe that. Alex Bregman's still out there. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, so your point is one that I keep playing in my head all the time, and that's that, hey, it would have been nice for any team to have Juan Soto at $51 million AAV. That's great. Okay. But you could put together a competitive team and spread that $51 million out with other players. You know what I mean? And that's what the Yankees need to do. They need to selectively spread that money out, and they will they could still find themselves in the World Series. At the end of the day, this is not a one-player sport. We all know this. So I suspect that they will do that.
Yeah. Sign an Alex Bregman and your whole lineup turns around. I mean, granted, he had a down year last year, but I still think he's a good hitter. There's – baseball is not a game where you sign one player and your team gets worlds better. We all know that. We just spent 10 minutes talking about how the Mets were not a great, great lineup, even though they just signed Juan Soto. So if you're a Yankees fan, and I've already seen this from the Yankees fans that I'm close to, they know. Pivot. Go sign yourself another arm. Sign a few bats. They don't need to be the best bats in the world. You still have Aaron Judge in the middle of that lineup, and you got him for a long time. I don't know. Go out there, sign Jazz Chisholm. Have him start playing second base again. You know, like, it's it could happen.
Hey, you know, I get at the Yankees. How do I say this? The Yankees, to me, and I this is purely conjecture. I'm not obviously a part of the organization, nor have I ever been in the office or in that dugout. But they seem to me like the Catholic school of baseball teams, right? Like, if the Mets were the fun public school, the Yankees are like the Catholic school where you talk bad to the nun and they'll slap you on the wrist. Like, they just don't seem like a very loose, fun. They're the Yankees we've always known them to be. A lot of rules, a lot of restrictions, like a certain Yankee tradition that's kept very tight and rigid. Like, I just don't think that resonates with a lot of players, and I think they struggle with that.
I didn't realize that Jazz Chisholm's actually under contract with the Yankees for 2025 and 2026. I don't know why I assumed that he was a free agent this year.
Oh, that's a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah. Okay. That deal that they made was a really good deal last season. I mean, because he can play either of those infield, third base, or second base positions, and he can even go play center field for you. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, there you go. There's another hole that doesn't need to be filled.
Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, the Yankees could, if they can attract players and get the right players there, I mean, they can make up the gap no problem. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's not like you're ever going to fill the whole gap of Juan Soto, but you can put together a team, field an Alex Bregman, Anthony Santander, I think would be great in that lineup. Yeah. I think you put those two guys like that in your lineup, I mean, you're probably not crying about losing Juan Soto in June. You know what I mean? Like, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. There's a couple interesting bats I think would be fun to go see play in New York if you're trying to shore up that lineup. I mean, imagine Jock Peterson with the short porch and right. That'd be fun to see.
Or make a trade with a Cody Bellinger. Go to the Cubs. Yeah, give me Cody Bellinger.
You could do that. He's going to opt out next season, but you could certainly do that.
Yeah.
The center field market is very weak. I'm looking here and I don't know why I'm I, I To me, Aaron Judge is a right fielder. I know he plays center field daily.
I agree.
He's got a cannon. He's not as mobile as a center fielder you want him to be. So it looks like he's probably going to play center field here moving forward. What does that mean? Okay. Well, Jerkson Profar is available. Austin Hayes is available. Austin Hayes would be such a good pickup for that Yankees team. I just saw that name. That would be so good.
You know who's also available? I'm not sure if you heard of him. I don't think I've ever mentioned him, but Luis Robert is also available.
Who would you want? Like a Spencer Jones?
I would literally, for Luis Robert, give me Spencer Jones and a lottery ticket in like single A, and I'll take that every day.
Wow. How many years is Luis? How many years of Luis Robert are you getting for that?
So for that, you're getting, I believe it's one more year with two player options, and I'm verifying that right now. So it is correct. It's 2025 for $15 million, and then two club options, excuse me, at $20 million for the next 2 years.
Club options?
Club options. So okay. 3 years of control.
Price just went up, though. You almost got to trade away like a Dominguez and a Jones for that.
I am not going to balk at that. That would
I'm sure you wouldn't. I'm sure you wouldn't. Spencer Jones's value has also tanked over the last year, too. He's the number 100 player on the top 100 list, and that's a significant fall from last year. But
my goodness.
That'd be an interesting scenario. See some Luis Robert action patrolling center field for the Yanks.
It would. You know, I think one of the things that we're hearing out of the winter meetings that we've heard for a couple weeks prior is that I think the White Sox are seen as overvaluing Luis Robert. Yeah, he had a great 2023, but he's been injury prone. We haven't really seen multiple full seasons of him, which is totally true. I won't deny that. Regardless, though, there are not a lot of strong center fielders in the league right now.
He's
a legitimate five-tool player still. And I think somebody is ultimately going to come around and want to snag him. Now, here's something interesting as we're talking about the White Sox. I think this will blow your mind. How many players do you think that the White Sox have with guaranteed salaries on a contract right now? Not pre-arb, not
on a contract. Is it just Luis Robert?
On an actual contract? It's not just Luis Robert, but it's pretty freaking close.
I'm trying to think who else is there. Benintendi, two.
Yes, three players. Luis Robert, Benintendi, and then they signed for 2025 Austin Slater. So three. That whole roster, they have three players on a contract. Holy shit.
That's a blank slate if I've ever heard one, man.
Oh, goodness.
That's pretty good. Okay, so now I'm theory crafting. Who the hell do they grab? I swear to God, I saw Max Kepler was available, but I'm not seeing him on my list.
I thought he was too, actually.
Max Kepler, yeah, he's available. There's someone, yep. 32 years old, 3.8 WAR last season.
And you're still talking about for the Yanks, right?
Yeah, so it's talking for the Yankees. No QO.
If we were to go, I'm really looking at this list. Like, yeah, Michael Conforto's off the board. I still think you can get something out of Harrison Bader. I think he can be an everyday center fielder, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do too. Harrison Bader. I don't know. That's not my job to figure out. The Yankees are kind of fucked right now, and they need to unfuck themselves.
That's exactly right. We're paying way too much attention to try to help these guys out.
We've counted out Jason Dominguez. Maybe the play is that Jason Dominguez comes and starts playing right field.
I mean, maybe, but the guy just needs to stay on the field. He struggles so hard. I mean, I am not ruling out him being a flop. I hate to say that.
I'm not ruling out him or Spencer Jones being a flop. I'm also trying to knock on some wood and try not to jinx Roman Anthony because he's the number one prospect in baseball. We have no idea. He hasn't set foot on a big league diamond. So
that's true. That's really true.
I also am like, I'm also in a scenario in my head where I want to like give him a 10-year contract right now. Do the Wander Franco thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, how did that work for the Rays?
Okay.
Okay, calm down. All right.
That's not going to be every time.
It's happening more often than I would like, I'll tell you that. All right, so I want to move over to pitiful, maybe isn't too strong a word, but they seem very pitiful these days. The Blue Jays. Like,
oh, my God.
This is a team,
the bridesmaids,
Parker,
of the MLB.
They are. They're always second. And here's the problem with them. They can't afford to be second. This is the last season they have locked up with Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette. Like, this would have been just a shot in the ass they needed to rejuvenate this franchise. And now, after 2025, they look doomed.
100%. I think you blow the team up. Not trying to sound funny. I think you trade Vladdy and trade Bo. And Bo's going to have to go play, like, third base or left field somewhere. Because the dude cannot play shortstop for the life of him. But yeah, I think Vladdy's got to go. Bo's got to go. Springer's, you're not going to get rid of him. Springer's around. Honestly, I don't know. How long is that contract? He still has like 4 years left on that contract. You could probably convince somebody to take him.
Maybe. Let's see what he has here. So George Springer actually has only two more seasons through 2026.
Yeah. You could probably convince somebody to take him this upcoming year and get an extra year of him. He has problems staying on the field as well, but he still plays defense at a decent level.
I mean, but your point is, I think reigns supreme here, and that's that when you look at their lineup, I mean, this is crazy. I'm going to throw out names in this lineup, and you please tell me if you ever heard of these guys. Bill Wagner, Ernie Clement, Nathan Lukes, Joey Loperfido. Do you even know who the hell those guys are? No.
Nope. No.
Come on.
Those are everyday players.
That's like I literally pulled random-ass names out of MLB The Show. Like, that's auto-generated baseball name.
That's like you've run a franchise into the ground. It's 2058, and you're still going. And that dude's like your MVP.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. But that's the issue with the Blue Jays. And so I say all that to say that, you know, you've made the point earlier that there are some National League teams that are becoming real powerhouses, and the Mets have added themselves to that list. On the flip side, I would make an argument here during the winter meetings that this is a pivotal offseason for some American League teams that can find themselves falling off the map, the Blue Jays being one, the Houston Astros being the other.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't even, not even thinking about them. I mean, they're fucked. Like, kind of. They're Verlander's gone. Bregman's gone. You're kind of hoping Jeremy Pena and the ghost of Jose Altuve can keep the place on its feet.
I mean, well, I'll give you a couple other layers
Minute Maid's
to this because
gone.
Minute Maid, it's Daikin or Daikin, whatever the hell that is. That sounds terrible. Minute Maid was an institution. That just
Bring
sounds
back
great.
Halliburton.
Dumb.
What was it? Enron Field.
Oh God.
How this funny would it be if they named it Halliburton Field now?
Yeah, right. This show is not sponsored by Halliburton, or Enron. All right. So. But I'll add these layers to this. Is I think about Kyle Tucker. Okay. Kyle Tucker's last season is next season. And here's the issue with Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker, 2025 is his.
Oh,
wait,
man.
Hold on. Yes, Kyle Tucker, 2025 is his last season. So here's the issue with Kyle Tucker. You look at over the last three or four seasons, the highest WAR for outfielders. You're looking at guys like Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, who's right there? Kyle Tucker.
There's
no way he is not getting a $400 million contract.
Oh, yeah. What is he, 31?
But 27.
Oh,
27. So let's layer in the fact that you know they're not going to extend him. If I was Kyle Tucker, I wouldn't extend with the Astros. He's going to go to free agency. He probably won't sign with the Astros. So say you have a scenario where you lose Bregman, you lose Kyle Tucker the next season. Framber Valdez also has a last year in 2025. And then who do you have coming up in the minors? Jack
Nobody.
Shit. They have one of the worst minor league systems in baseball right now. If it's not 30th, it's 29th. So yeah. We could see the fall of a franchise that has been uber successful over the last decade.
Let's think about why they were successful, though. They were successful because of a solid few years of drafting.
Yes.
And then they started not being successful when those players were done with arbitration.
Correct. They can never hang on to them.
They've never been a team to go out and get the big guy. I mean, I guess if you count Andy Pettitte and Roger Clemens, I'll give you those guys. How about that? But it's been a long time. I don't know. The Astros just have this speed bump in their process that they can't get around, which is just if we didn't develop them, they're not sticking around.
I do think there is something that people often forget about, and I think it really made a huge difference. How long does it take you right now to get a top pick in the draft through the minors to majors? 3 to 4 years minimum.
Yeah.
You know, unless you have like a superstar. If you go back 3 to 4 years ago, what was happening? Well, the Astros lost the first and second round pick in 2020 and 2021 for the sign stealing scandal. And I think it set them back more than people realize.
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct. Every single team needs, if not those picks, because in Major League Baseball, we are uniquely positioned where you cannot trade draft picks, like unused draft picks, as trade capital. But what you can do is draft players with pedigree. Hopefully they don't hit the headlines and you can trade them away. That's the unique aspect of Major League Baseball. If you don't have your first and second overall picks over 2 year season, you don't have trade bait. You don't have anything to hit the market with. And now we're seeing it happen. You're absolutely right. This is the delayed onset effect of what happened in 2017.
It's just really weird to think about, like, the Steady Eddies, most competitive team in baseball, where I truly think, and it's funny, Parker, because on the Utini Baseball Show eons ago, I said in 2024 that this would be the year 2024 when the Astros took a dip. And they didn't take as big of a dip as I thought. They were still a very competitive team in 2024. But trust me, I mean this when I say I'm taking that to the bank again for 2025. I think this team is getting to the end of its run.
Yeah, for a long time, they were like, they were kind of like the Rays, where it was like, they're just going to be good. They're just going to be good. Yeah. You could point at players, though, with the Astros, and they always felt like the Rays in terms of developing random pitchers out of nowhere. But they really relied on those position players, those hallmark keystone players in Altuve, Bregman, Correa for a long time, and then Peña out of fucking nowhere, like Kyle Tucker. They have been relying on those guys for a long time, and the reckoning is coming, man. It's already here.
So Jeremy Peña, I think back to Jeremy Peña too, and like even Jeremy Peña hasn't been what they thought he was going to be, and it probably didn't do him any favors that his rookie season he won the ALCS MVP and the World Series MVP. Like, that did him no favors, right? So since then, so you look at his whole career. Hold on, I want to make sure I get this right. Make sure that it's actually whole career because I'm seeing different numbers here. So his total career weighted runs created plus average 100. It's 100.
Oh, wow.
Come on. And that probably shocked you. It shocked me.
And the worst part is he's like still – it's almost like he spent 2 years taking minor league at-bats at the big league level. And those are just years of service he's closer and closer to just hitting free agency closer. And he's going to start making good money because in my head, I still associate Jeremy Peña with being a very good player. So that's going to play. That type of feeling plays in arbitration.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. So Parker, I want to go back to Juan Soto as we get to the end here. And one of the things that I thought about today was I asked myself, you know, are we really ever going to see this again? And what would it take for a player to again see a contract this big? Is it really a perfect storm where all the factors and all the stars aligned, or is it really possible that we can see this again?
Well, it takes somebody debuting at 19 years old genuinely. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to debut and get a full year of service at the age of 19. There's not many of those guys. I think the closest one you could see might – maybe I'm being a homer here, but it might actually be Roman Anthony. I think this is his age 20 season coming up, and if he gets a full year of service time, we might see ourselves with an age 27 unrestricted free agent or something like that. But, like, I don't know if it happens, at least not anytime soon. I think the best case scenario for it happening is international signee. I think just because those guys start playing pro ball at 16 years old, they develop quickly and get up to the big leagues quickly. I could see it happening. But it's not going to happen anytime soon because we would know by now, right? Like, we would know 7 years prior, this kid's a rocket. He's going to be crazy at the big league level. Like, we knew Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, and Juan Soto were all insanely good at baseball when they were 17, 18 years old. And I just don't see anybody on that scale yet coming up through the big leagues.
So it's interesting. I share that same thought. I do think it's going to be pretty rare that we see that again. Here's what I will say, though. You know, I went through the list and I was thinking about, okay, what about these young guys who made these debuts? Like, you look at Jackson Churio, outfielder with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. He's already signed to an extension. Bobby Witt Jr. already got his big extension. So I started thinking more. And I think there's only one guy that potentially could get this kind of contract, and that would be Jackson Merrill of the San Diego Padres, who made his major league debut at age 20. And if you look at what he did in his rookie season, 4.4 WAR, 24 homers, batted .292, and had an OPS plus of 127. If he continues that trajectory, he maybe gets close to it. I don't think it's quite 750, 800 million, but he could be the next closest if he holds up to what he's been doing.
We'll see, because by the time that man's a free agent, who knows?
Oh, God.
We went from $360 million to $700 million overnight.
So it's funny you say that, because I did save. I took a snapshot on my phone right before we recorded because it popped up. Largest contracts in MLB history. So, of course, we have Juan Soto that we've been talking about at 165. We talked about Shohei Ohtani at 10
That's
years,
Bryce
700.
Harper, right?
Shohei Ohtani. No, Shohei Ohtani's at 700 million.
What am I saying number... after Shohei?
Oh, after Shohei? No. No, I would think so too. So after Shohei, it goes Mike Trout at 425 for 12 years.
Oh, my God.
But look at that difference, 700 to 425 for who we thought was going to be the next Babe Ruth, the best baseball player of all time, Mike Trout.
I was one of those people. I was telling people how Mike Trout was the best baseball player of all time.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Mookie Betts, a big dip below that from 426 down to 365 for 12 years. I bet the Red Sox would sign up for that right now, huh?
Probably, yeah. I think so.
Did I pour salt in the wound there? I'm sorry.
I mean, if you sign Mookie Betts for $400 million back in 2019, there's no way to offload David Price's contract, and that's just unconscionable.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at that. That everyone won, right?
Yep. Okay. Everybody won.
Oh my God. Yeah, I've just ruined the last 48 minutes. Oh goodness.
I can't believe what a world we live in, man. What a world where $765 million just got signed. Baseball's fun, man. Baseball's in a good who's trying to say this game's dying?
Yeah, right. Who didn't get the memo because this guy just got $765 million. Yeah. Oh, goodness. I don't even know, man.
I was just telling somebody the other day, because everybody knows that I'm a baseball guy, and at work I had somebody asking me, like, what is this? How does that even happen? How much money do baseball teams even make? Oh. And I Googled it. Last year in revenue, the Mets made right around $400 million in revenue. And he was like, okay. So they're spending $50 million of that $400 million in revenue on Juan Soto. I was like, you can't look at the Mets. Steve Cohen makes money other places. You can't look at the Mets as the example.
And also, that's not how that works, right? Like,
no.
It's that the revenue is what's left over are not even necessarily, right? The profit's what's left over, not the revenue, right. But it's all part of the calculation. So,
and then like they don't factor in ballpark revenue because ballpark revenue goes straight into ballpark like interest payments and stuff like that. Like it's weird how they calculate the money.
Yeah, that's baseball math, and we are not good enough on this show to go into baseball math.
Nope.
I barely go into regular math.
We're going to be doing a lot of math on the next episode, though.
100%. So to wrap it up, I mean, we've kind of beat a dead horse here, but I mean, this is – I want to stress, like, this is one of, if not the most significant signing in baseball history for what it means, for the value, for – the rivalry component of this, Parker, this goes down as perhaps the most historic signing in baseball history.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees probably hate the Mets more than the Red Sox these days. Like, they are the monkey that won't get off the back, a very vocal owner, a very vocal fan base that shares a city with you, success over the last couple years, a driving desire to sign the best talent and be more successful in the future. Yeah, I think the Yankees and Mets, I think we're in for a treat over the next at least like 5-6 years.
I think so. You know what it reminds me of? It's almost like a relationship where, like, you know, the Yankees are the big brother, Mets are the little brother. They beat the shit out of the little brother for years. And all of a sudden now we're all big boys. And now the Yankees are living with mom and dad, and the Mets are all growing up and dating the hot girl and got the great job. That's where we're at right now.
100%. Yep. We're in like the leather jacket villain era of the baseball timeline.
Oh, that's amazing. That is good. Folks, we were super happy to come on, talk about Juan Soto today. We are in the middle of the winter meetings. I mean, we're in the thick of it. I literally have an iPad in front of me with MLB Network on just in case anything trickled through live on the show. It did not, because we're the late night baseball show and we're going into the depths of the evening. But we will be back later this week on Thursday. We'll run through everything that happened in the winter meetings, talk about kind of the fallout, what this all means, and have some fun along the way. I'm also going to do an extra little teaser, and I'm not going to – this is such a tease, and you're not getting any more information than this. The next episode, we're going to have a full episode after the winter meetings, and I'm going to give you my most interesting team in baseball over the next 5 years, and you're going to be surprised on who it is, and I can't wait.
I can't wait either. That's – depending on who you ask, it might be obvious, and depending on who you ask, it might be like, what the fuck?
That's exactly the reaction I want, but don't worry. You'll have to wait 2 weeks. We'll go ahead and get into it. But folks, thanks for joining us tonight here on the Late Night Baseball Show. If you are listening to us on your podcast server or distributor of choice, thank you. But we highly recommend you going ahead and following us on YouTube. Make sure you're liking the video, subscribing, so that you can see our faces each and every week as we talk baseball. Good night. We'll see you soon. Take care.